This is Susan Livingston reporting the global extreme weather for the week ending 1 April 2016. The National Snow and Ice Data Center reports winter sea ice covered only 9 million square kilometers of the Arctic Ocean in 2016. That's 8,000 square kilometers less than the old record set in 2015, a difference slightly smaller than the state of Connecticut. It's also some 700,000 square kilometers less than the 30-year average, a difference the size of Texas and California combined. Greenland melt is being accelerated by Arctic warming, which is due in turn to blocking high pressure systems that enhance the flow of warm, moist air and distort the normal east-west flow of the jet stream in a north-south direction. Besides contributing to sea level rise, this increased surface melting slows the Gulf Stream. New estimates of Antarctic melt predict about twice as much contribution to sea level rise as projected just 3 years ago, reports Al Jazeera. Yet these projections are unlikely to account for the effect of the upside-down rivers, or basal channels, studied by Karen Alley and colleagues and reported in Discover. These channels tend to form at the edges of pinning points, such as peninsulas, and are accelerating the flow of deeper, warmer water upward and carving fractures or fault lines into the West Antarctic ice shelf at the rate of up to 33 feet per year. According to a study in Nature Climate Change, extreme weather will have an impact on basic needs such as food and water in around 30% of areas in sub-Saharan Africa that grow maize and bananas, and 60% of those that grow beans, with land eventually becoming unsuitable for cultivating these staples. Bananas and plantains provide around 25% of food energy needs for 70 million people in Africa. South Africa had an abrupt end to their summer season last weekend, with 15 centimeters of snow and wind chills of -3°C. This week, gale-force winds brought temperatures back up to 32°C in the inland regions. Australia's Great Barrier Reef is experiencing its worst bleaching event in 15 years, with the most pristine portions in its worst shape ever, reports Al Jazeera. Coral bleaching occurs when the calciferous polyps eject their colorful algae symbionts in response to acidification. The ejection threshold is lowered when temperature increases, as it does during an El Niño event. 16% of the world's reefs died in the 1997-98 El Niño event. The New Zealand Herald reports severely stormy weather with 120 km per hour winds and up to 24 centimeters of rain in the middle of last week. Some 12,800 people lost power in Auckland and 6,000 more in the far north. Evacuations were necessary in the tourist mecca of Franz Josef due to lack of water service to the village. Rewaka, near Motueka, Tasmania, was also evacuated. Extinction Radio contributor Kevin Hester reports from Down Under that the flooding was exacerbated by the choking of riverbeds with gravel debris released by glacial collapse. Quote, "This was no ordinary flooding," unquote. A major forest fire is burning on Mount Apo, reports the Philippine Sun Star. Quote, "That should be expected considering the number of climbers who went up Apo for the Holy Week. 1,000 were to be allowed. We do not know how many actually went up, but even less than 1,000 will be too big a footprint on a mountain that is suffering from a major El Nino. One wrong move, one misplaced spark, and you get a fire," unquote. Severe storms across the western Mediterranean left parts of Catalonia and the French Riviera underwater, reports Al Jazeera. Northwestern Spain has had almost 14 centimeters of rain since 26 March, with 11 centimeters in 48 hours. Normal rainfall for the region for the entire month of March is just over 9 centimeters, spread out over 14 days. Storm Katie made landfall in the small hours of Easter Monday on the southwestern coast of England. A total of 3.5 centimeters of rain and wind gusts up to 170 kilometers per hour were recorded, reports the UK Independent. One kayaker was swept away in floodwaters after his son and their dog were rescued. More than 80,000 homes lost power. 24 flights were diverted from Gatwick and 60 flights were canceled at Heathrow, reports Al Jazeera. 10 fire trucks and 70 firefighters extinguished a restaurant fire in East London as the storm arrived, reports the Evening Standard. 13 people were rescued from flats above the restaurant. 10 others had evacuated uninjured before firefighters arrived. The Irish Examiner forecasts 20% less rain with an increase in severe weather events. Cod is likely to disappear and jellyfish will pose a threat to salmon farms. The Mayo News announced a public talk by Dr. Conor Murphy of the National University of Ireland, Maynooth, titled, quote, "Are the recent extreme weather events changing the unwritten agreement between the government and the people of Ireland?" unquote, in which he will explore how citizens and communities can, quote, "radically rethink their response to more common weather-related events," unquote. The Irish Independent reports that reduced visibility and slick pavement from unexpected driving rain and sleet caused a 15-car collision. 10 people were injured. Extreme weather conditions are not only damaging crops and other agricultural production, but also pose a threat to health and safety as they create water and food scarcity and disrupt electricity, reports the Kashmir Times. Population growth and its concentration in one place, the large-scale construction works, and bad management practices are shrinking the wetlands and forests. There has been an alarming increase in the number of vehicles in Kashmir during the last 3 decades, and their emissions become trapped in the basin among the lofty Himalayas in which Kashmir nestles. Kashmir's tourist industry took a hit last weekend due to a hailstorm. Extensions have been granted on more than 100 expedition permits due to as yet unrepaired damage to trails from last year's earthquake that triggered avalanches and killed 19 people. Urbanization has reduced water absorption abilities and increased the risk of flooding in Hong Kong, reports the South China Morning Post. With virtually no groundwater resource and highly irregular rainfall patterns, adopting a sponge city design would restore the natural water cycle, enhance water security, and add resilience towards climate change. A sponge city is one that can hold, clean, and drain water using an ecological approach. Bangladesh can expect above-average rainfall, severe heat at more than 40 C, and at least one cyclone in the month of April, predicts the Dhaka Tribune. South American banana growers expect a lucrative season due to the devastating effect of January's extreme cold on China's banana crop, reports Fresh Plaza. BioRes clearly shares my skepticism regarding the North American Strategy Agreement signed by the U.S. and Canada, reported last week. BioRes reports that legal challenges to the pre-existing Clean Power Plan were upheld in February by the Supreme Court, and current pledges by parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, would only limit temperature rise to 2.7 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels by the end of the century, a level experts warn will further increase climate and weather extremes. Japan has promised a 26% drop in emissions by 2030 from 2013 levels, with an 80% cut by 2050 as a long-term target. Japan took their fleet of nuclear reactors offline after the 2011 Fukushima disaster, but it appears that the reactors will be restarted in the face of, quote, energy security and climate concerns, unquote, resulting from subsequent resumed dependency on fossil fuel imports to meet energy demands. China, the world's biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, has accelerated their emission reduction goals in their new 5-year plan. They have committed to peaking carbon dioxide emissions by around 2030, if not sooner, lowering emissions per unit of GDP by 60-65% from 2005 levels by 2030, and increasing the share of non-fossil fuels in the energy mix to 20% by 2030. Some reports suggest China will invest $353 billion in renewable sources by 2020, as well as bringing online a new national carbon market, boosting research and development spending, and developing a low-carbon infrastructure. The EU is responsible for about 10% of greenhouse gas emissions. While countries such as France and Sweden had last month pushed for deepening the EU's target to reduce emissions by 40% under 1990 levels by 2030, the move has garnered little traction among the EU at large. While politicians lag, the building trades forge ahead. According to Coexist, zero net emissions buildings are more resilient to extreme weather, and people enjoy better health and more satisfaction with living and working in them. Occupants are not tied down to the conventional utility model, which in most cases still penalizes customers for consuming more efficiently. ZNE buildings consume no more energy than they produce, and sometimes less. The Netherlands has 110,000 ZNE buildings so far, and London is following their lead. Vancouver, Canada, Sydney, Australia, and even a few places in China and India, as well as more than a dozen cities across the U.S., including New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., Vancouver, San Francisco, Phoenix, and Austin, plan to require ZNE for all new buildings by 2030 and retrofit all existing buildings to ZNE by 2050. An editorial in the Express Tribune alleges that, quote, urban planning in Pakistan is often piecemeal or indeed wholly absent, the cities expanding laterally with little regulation or thought for how they will be affected by extreme weather events. Endemic corruption feeds through into a lack of disaster preparedness, unquote. The editor cites findings by a UK-based risk management company that, quote, in countries such as India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, there are building codes in place, often rudimentary, but everywhere poorly implemented. The March McKinsey report indicates that the surge in renewable energy development is too little too late. Despite the fact that renewable energy will account for an estimated 43% of Africa's new power plants, 48% of Asia's, and 63% of Latin America's, half of the world's electricity will still be provided by coal and natural gas in 2040. In order to stay below that mythical 2C temperature increase, renewables would have to generate 50% of the world's energy by 2028. The current level is 9%. With CO2 levels in excess of 400 parts per million, global power sector emissions are not expected to peak before 2026. A panel from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine is advising the U.S. Global Change Research Program in creating the fourth National Climate Assessment, reports Scientific American. This group differs from the one who prepared the third National Climate Assessment in having more representation from the social sciences and spending more effort on multimedia messaging in an attempt to increase the influence of the report by making it relevant to a wider audience. A study at the University of Wisconsin at Madison concluded that habitat loss is occurring, you got it, much faster than predicted, based on changes in range among 285 U.S. land bird species, reports the Isthmus. Like migrant humans, they are often not well adapted to their new habitats and are often not welcomed by species of more lengthy tenure. They encounter new predators and parasites and lose traditional sources of food and shelter. The big surprise from the study is that changes in rainfall and extreme weather events are just as important as rising temperatures in determining these range displacements. Forbes reports that Arctic nesting birds are getting rained out due to global warming. In a habitat without trees, these migratory birds have adapted to building their nests on the ground. What a surprise for them to find their breeding grounds uninhabitable. A blizzard in Colorado in the middle of last week forced a cancellation of about 1,000 flights at Denver's International Airport. Snow fell at the rate of 7.6 centimeters per hour. Even snowplows were swamped in their effort to get traffic moving again. There was another significant snow in the region the following weekend. To the northwest on the 4,400-meter glaciated Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, a man died when blizzard conditions cut him and his hiking partner off from the Muir base camp last weekend. She made it back to the camp, situated at 3,100 meters, as did another solo hiker. The two survivors were airlifted to a local hospital with hypothermia and frostbite. There was snow in the northern Great Lakes regions in the middle of last week, and according to NJ.com, the polar vortex is due for another visit to the Great Lakes region and the Midwest via the Great Plains in the early days of April. Also in the middle of last week, wildfires in Oklahoma and Kansas forced evacuations. Snow on Easter Sunday yielded only a temporary lull in the fire alert conditions. More than 1,600 square kilometers, 400,000 acres, says the Wichita Eagle, had burned as of Tuesday. Arizona and New Mexico lost about 7,000 acres to fire, reports AZ Central. KSLA reports more storms and tornado alerts in Louisiana, Arkansas, and eastern Texas. That's it for the headlines. This week's special topics report is on extreme weather and health. The new science of attribution of extreme weather events created recently by the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine could bring the notion of accountability to a new level due to the dependency of actuarial science on the ever-improving art and science of weather forecasting. Let's have a look at Heidi Cullen's New York Times editorial from 11 March about this new science in the context of the recent sale of drilling rights in the Gulf of Mexico. Asian Oil and Gas is not recognizing causal links when they make statements such as, quote, the threat of weather-related offshore disasters across Asia is growing as both the number of deepwater operations and the severity of extreme weather events increase, close quote. If the growth of deepwater operations places more lives and more material assets in increasingly greater harm's way, thus inflating the dollar value of losses beyond sustainable levels, doesn't that beg the question of why it is that the number of deepwater operations is growing in seeming defiance of the increase in the severity of extreme weather events? I wonder if the attribution scientists will stand up to the government and say, with retired Lieutenant General Russell Honoré writing for The Hill, quote, an impartial risk assessment of the offshore drilling program would reveal that exposing the Gulf to an industry that is simply unaccountable for the sake of oil supply decades down the road makes no logical sense, close quote. Today, continues Honoré, the Gulf is the graveyard for tens of thousands of abandoned orphan wells that either continue to leak oil or sit idle, ready to rupture with the next big hurricane. Or will researchers reserve their most probing analyses for studies about other countries? In an analysis of the underlying causes of the severe drought plaguing the population of 20 million of Sao Paulo, Brazil, Cullen and her colleagues found that climate change was not a major influence and attributed the drought to population growth, increasing water consumption, and leaky pipes. Last week, I spoke of how difficult it is for homeowners who live too close to a body of water to obtain flood insurance at any price. But Think Progress reports that massive protests did not delay last Wednesday's auction of drilling leases for a total area of the Gulf of Mexico, some 1.5 times the size of Louisiana. So how is it that the prospectors who flock to the New Orleans Superdome to bid on those leases can get insurance coverage for their offshore rigs? Let us also look at where deepwater operations are growing and where they are not. Property values on the Gulf Coast, where there are currently about 4,400 active leases under control of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, are a fraction of those of the Eastern Seaboard, where a recent presidential executive order declared a moratorium on drilling. In light of these considerations, Cullen's analysis seems naive at best. She claims that, quote, understanding how climate change is affecting extreme weather is critical for insurers, policymakers, engineers, and emergency managers as they assess risk and figure out how to make communities more resilient, unquote, as if community resilience is the purpose of their risk assessment. It is not. The purpose of their risk assessment is to establish the dollar amount of insurance premiums. She continues, quote, this knowledge can help to steer decisions on where and how to build or rebuild after a storm or flood, or whether to build or rebuild at all, unquote, as if such knowledge could ever steer such decisions in opposition to the power of the dollar to build in spite of risk, or in opposition to the right to return after weather disasters. At worst, Cullen is playing the resilient community card as a rationale for more research funding. Quote, still greater investment in research is needed to ensure that we're making the best possible decisions to protect our communities, unquote. The government of the Philippines reported that it has completed a map of no-go zones, reports the Inquirer, that delineates areas that are off-limits to mining in order to shield prime agricultural land and agri-fishery development zones, tourism development areas, and island ecosystems from mining hazards. The government may also require companies to set aside sufficient funds in trust to ensure environmental safeguards, community benefits, and compensation for unforeseen mining accidents. In a region noted for vulnerability to increasingly frequent and severe extreme weather events, one might think insurance premiums would present too great a cost burden to support industrial growth, or that insurers would be unwilling to provide insurance at any price. The Climate Council's predicted 0.2-meter sea level rise will threaten 61,500 homes in Queensland, Australia. But University of Sydney Associate Professor Abbas Elzain said that homeowners don't want to hear about it because their property values will decrease and/or their insurance premiums will increase. The British Standards Institution found that extreme weather accounted for more losses to global shipping than any other cause, $33 billion, or 50% more than cargo theft. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, 2015 marked the eighth consecutive year that disaster from extreme weather has cost the U.S. economy more than $10 billion. And a poll of U.S. motorists by the American Automobile Association suggests that drivers spend an average of $3 billion a year dealing with repairs to their vehicles due to potholes caused by abrupt freeze-thaw cycles and extreme weather events. Looking ahead, the National Center for Atmospheric Research will be ready later this spring to forecast heat waves east of the Mississippi River based on water temperatures in a region of the Pacific Ocean to the north of Hawaii. When the southern part of that region is unusually warm and the northeast of that region is unusually cold, the odds of a heat wave increase to 1 in 4 at 50 days out. By 40 days out, the odds have increased to 1 in 2. The Digital Journal calls weather modification, quote, a welcome idea around the world, unquote, but acknowledges, quote, some concern as to whether being able to control the weather would disrupt the delicate balance of nature, unquote, and says we'll have to wait for answers until mid-century when, quote, more accurate weather predictions and weather modifications can become a reality, unquote. Some concern? I'm very concerned. In previous weeks, we've seen how extreme weather contributes to the spread of infectious disease, whether by providing ideal breeding grounds for disease organism hosts such as mosquitoes, or by changing habitat parameters against the needs of fragile, complex humans and in favor of the disease organisms themselves. And based on the overwhelming weight of recent evidence, we can only conclude that climate change is increasing the intensity and duration of extreme weather while also making it less predictable. According to a study reported in Green Biz, while the health-related cost of climate change was $14 billion between 2002 and 2009, that amount could reach $14 billion per year by 2020. And it appears that primary care physicians, not scientists, spiritual leaders, or politicians, are the most trusted source for information on climate change issues related to health, regardless of the political position, religion, or socioeconomic class of the patient. Health AIM reports on the role of the weather in causing illness. Migraine can be caused by abrupt change in temperature, falling barometric pressure, or increased humidity. Heart attack and asthma can be triggered due to constriction of blood vessels in the airways upon abrupt encounter with cold. Joint pain is often the result of the expansion of soft tissue in response to a drop in barometric pressure. Sleep apnea might be caused by a drop in barometric pressure since use of a continuous positive airway pressure or CPAP mask provides relief from the condition. Note that none of the above illnesses are due to disease. Could there be a link between climate change and health in the challenge to our immune system presented by wildly fluctuating temperatures at this time of year? KCRG reports that in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, the month of March holds the record for the most extreme temperature differences with a low of minus 29 C and a high of 31 C, 60 degrees difference. This March, the lowest temperature was minus 16.7 C on the 2nd, and the highest was just 6 days later, 22.8 C on the 8th. Maintaining a constant body temperature has got to be a challenge under such circumstances. Your Four State reports that doctors in the U.S. Mid-Atlantic blame the roller coaster weather for the spread of a particularly nasty viral bronchitis that came with asthma-like symptoms and took about 2 weeks to heal. Huffington Post senior science editor Jacqueline Howard described findings that extreme El Niño events contribute to the global spread of disease organisms simply by means of migration. Asian strains of waterborne bacteria caused both a stomach illness that arrived in Peru and Latin America in sync with the extreme El Niño events of 1997 and 2010, and a cholera outbreak in Peru in 1990 that resulted in more than 13,000 deaths. The study concluded that climate-sensitive bacteria may attach to larger organisms such as zooplankton and piggyback along ocean currents to spread globally. In late 2014, more than 400,000 people in Toledo, Ohio, were without water for days due to a dangerous Microcystis algae bloom that was the result of unusually high temperatures interacting with high levels of phosphorus pollution in Lake Erie, the source of the city's drinking water, reports Cincinnati.com. Scientists have noted that longer, hotter summers associated with climate change make algae blooms bigger and more problematic. The Cincinnati, Ohio metropolitan area has the 8th worst air quality in the United States. Quote, coal plants produce significant levels of pollution that worsen asthma and other lung diseases. Carbon pollution from coal plants is also a major driver of climate change that creates a broad array of health problems, unquote. Tech Times reports that two species of toxic algae have expanded their territory northward in response to warming waters in the Pacific. Last November, California health officials detected dangerous neurotoxin levels in crabs linked to a major algae bloom off the west coast of North America. In December, Mississippi state authorities closed oyster reefs and beaches on the Mississippi Gulf Coast because of a dangerous red tide breakout. Extreme weather contributes to the spread of infectious diseases in livestock as well. In the Philippines, almost 110,000 chickens have died of the Newcastle virus, reports the Gulf News. The virus attacks the immune system and presents with symptoms including colds, hemorrhage, weakness, and paralysis. Humans exposed to sick birds can experience mild flu symptoms and conjunctivitis. And extreme weather contributes to the spread of infectious disease in crops. In Italy, the spread of the pathogen Xylella has decimated ancient olive groves in southern Puglia, according to the local. Psycho and sociopathology are non-infectious disorders that are also sensitive to extreme weather, according to a study reported in the Providence, Rhode Island Journal. During their record-breaking cold and snowy winter last year, property crimes dropped by 17%, and only 6 people were shot by mid-March, while the 3 years prior to that saw 15, 14, and 17 shootings. During this year's record-breaking warm winter, there were 19 people shot. During the summer months, Sean Verano, associate professor of criminal justice at Roger Williams University, says that higher temperatures and extreme rainfall lead to increases in conflict, especially in impoverished areas where the heat becomes an irritant and sends people outside. Similar results were reported by the New Straits Times for Malaysia. Penang-based consulting psychiatrist Dr. Ong Beng Keat says, quote, heat is an example of an environmental stress, much like noise, air pollution, extreme cold, and lack of sunlight, unquote, and can lead to physical, physiological, and emotional changes. A hot environment predisposes a person to fatigue and poor sleep that is associated with negative mood changes such as agitation, irritability, and aggression. The News International says 100 recent weather-related deaths in Gilgit-Baltistan, north of Pakistan, would have been prevented if governments, quote, properly planned for the occurrence of freak weather conditions, close quote. The death toll in last year's heat wave in Pakistan was 1,233 people, reports the Express Tribune. More than 10,000 people were brought into the Jinnah Postgraduate Medical Center in Karachi, of which 84 were already dead, and another 300 died upon admission. According to another report, the nationwide total hospitalized was almost 72,000. The heat wave started on 19 June with a high temperature of 41°C, reached a peak of 45°C on 21 June, and didn't start to subside until 25 June when it dropped to 38°C. According to Karachi Metropolitan Corporation Administrator Roshan Ali Sheikh, quote, there isn't single agency to deal with natural disasters, nor is there any coordination agency, close quote. This year's heat wave is due at the end of May. Farming suicide in India is legendary, whether due to the abandonment of traditional farming practices for the empty promises of industrial agriculture in an unsustainable globalized market, or to the increasingly common extreme weather events. The harvest season for wheat, barley, mustard, sesame, and peas coincides with the winter monsoon starting in October, peaking in February, and extending through March. This year, between a precipitous drop in commodity prices and damage to crops from unusually severe hail, not only the farmers but also the middle marketers are feeling the squeeze, and India's agricultural trade chain is in a state of collapse, reports the Indian Express. A report by the United Nations Children's Emergency Fund, or UNICEF, finds that children suffer disproportionately from weather disasters, reports the La Crosse Tribune. Nearly 160 million children live in areas of severe drought, water scarcity, and air pollution, and feel the deadliest impact of dangerous diseases and respiratory conditions as temperatures increase. As crops fail, livestock dies, income drops, and food prices rise, children pay the highest price due to inequitable access to food and water, and it is the children who are the most impacted by the steady rise in climate-driven migration. A report by the U.S. Department of Agriculture finds that children with nearby access and views of nature often show fewer symptoms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and increased mental concentration and focus. Through free innovative software tools, the U.S. Forest Service helps communities identify where and what kind of trees might mitigate the impacts of extreme weather events and make the financial case for investment in urban trees. In Minneapolis, Minnesota, for example, analysis demonstrated that investment in tree care had lowered energy costs by $6.8 million and increased property values by an estimated $7.1 million. Thanks for listening to the Global Extreme Weather Report. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston.